you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here's my fantasy. It never happens like this. I would love to be in my basement watching the Reds versus the Dodgers in the pennant, fighting for the pennant with my daughter and my son and my wife, who's a White Sox fan, and she wouldn't care about the National League, but I would sit there and it would be back and forth, and my kids would be like jumping in my face, and I would be very patient and say, just you wait, it'll happen. and then the Reds would come back and embarrass the Dodgers, and then I would win, and I would win graciously, and it would be a teaching moment. Or
love it.
Everyone's got their thing, fanatics.
Take me out to the podcast. No, we're not going to a baseball game, guys. Sorry. But we do have a baseball fan on today. Yes, Clancy Brown loves... Well, I don't even want to get into it quite yet. Hold on. We first still have to do our final, truly the end. What did we think about the Dexter New Blood season? I know last week was episode 10, and we had Clyde Phillips on, the grand poobah himself, the showrunner, the creator, in a sense, more than anyone else has ever been, of Dexter, the television series. And that was great. But we got to hear from my co-host today, Claire Kramer, and I, by the way, am one of your other co-hosts, David Magadoff, yes, Teddy Reed from Dexter New Blood, about what she really thinks, because she, of course, is our resident super fan of the Dexter New Blood series. So, Claire, lay it on us. How'd you feel?
Oh, David. It is the final finale. I do feel like it's the final finale. There was the finale of seasons past, which is kind of like, the ghost of Christmas past. And then we had episode 10, Sins of Our Father. I have
dead.
A lot of emotions. I have a lot of emotions. Yeah. I mean, listen, what happened was the inevitable. And, Clyde for many years has been saying Dexter needs to atone for his sins. There is no code that the code is created out of necessity. The necessity for Dexter and for Harry to accept his need to kill. But his need to kill supersedes the code, as we saw in the flashback in those final moments where there's the confrontation with Harrison and Dexter. And Harrison is saying, "Look what you've done," which we talked about last week was a line from episode 1, season 1. Way back, and you see the montage of innocent victims, and so in a way, I did not want Dexter to die because I wanted another season and another show and more Michael C. Hall as Dexter Morgan. However, those last moments were the most real we've ever seen Dexter be. He had his guard down. I agree and I disagree with some of the, artistic choices, but ultimately the people driving the show, Michael, Clyde, you know, these guys that have been with these characters and with this story for so long, they did what they felt was right. And I respect that, you know, I respect that a lot.
I think we have the main issue at hand is Twitter was aghast initially at what happened. They were like, you have so many tweets I saw was, how could you have gotten it wrong twice? And you have also the creators of the show who were like, we were very thoughtful and this was a way to end it. I mean, Michael, I don't think was going to do this again if he didn't die. I think that was a major part of why he wanted to do it. So it's funny how the creative license of a prolific and iconic character is sort of held in so many different people's hands, right? Is it like, mm-hmm. who is one to decide? Like, there's that feeling if you're a fan where you're like, you owe this to the universe, Clyde Phillips and Michael C. Hall and creators of Dexter, to continue this on forever, for this is good for all of us and we all love him and we now own the heart of Dexter. But then you also have, it's like, who owns it? Isn't it such a fascinating thing? Like, I think you nailed it, Claire.
Yeah, it is. Everybody feels invested, you know, everybody, but no more so than Michael C. Hall. He's the number one. I don't care who you are. You're not as invested as he is. He had so much integrity playing that character. And, you know, the fact is his best acting by a long shot was that last scene with Harrison. In the both series, New Blood and the original whole entire
and the
run.
Season. He did a great job the whole season, right?
He did a great job. He's a phenomenal actor, but I'm saying, like, he took it to a new level. He allowed us to, he allowed himself, he allowed Dexter, the character, to feel something. And that is very, very rare when that happens. And to see that and to see him have Harrison enact the code. Harrison does implement the code in killing his father. You know, that is the code. You kill bad people. You take, and I don't believe Harrison has the same dark passenger because, you know, it's just, he's angry. He's a kid and he's freaking angry. Like he said, I'm angry. I don't have this drive to kill that you have, you know? And no, we're not going to go being a father son, like, you know,
Bonnie and Clyde.
Go to Los Angeles and, you know, murder, you know, vigilantes and whatever. That's not happening because Harrison is not cut from the same cloth Dexter is. Dexter's one in a million, one of that micro percent of the population that is truly a narcissist, that is truly has no conscience, you know? And only in the moment where he says to Harrison, yeah, use the code on me, that's the most real we've ever seen Dexter.
It was pretty epic, to say the least. I thought that whole, you know, I remember reading episode 10, and then watching it, though, I was, like, on the edge of my seat, like, the whole time. And I'm watching myself in it and going, like, I still don't remember some of these things. This, again, it's been so long in a beautiful way where I'm so glad I sort of just forgot some of these things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what happens. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's okay, that's fine.
I really wish. Now, my only,
yeah,
like,
how would you,
again, I'm invested.
Yeah. How would you tweet?
But I would have liked to seen Batista have a final confrontation with Dexter. If they're going to bring him in to episode 10, which they did, you know, and then he's on his way with all his files and everything he knows about the Bay Harbor Butcher and blah, blah, blah. Okay, but that was missing for me. Like, don't build it up, you know. When we had Clyde on last week, he kept quoting Anton Chekhov and saying, you never put a loaded gun on the stage unless you're going to shoot it. Well, don't put Batista in the episode where Dexter dies unless he can confront him, you know. That was a scene that was missing for me. I don't know. What did you think?
Well, I didn't watch a lot of the series. So I think for people who have, what I'm learning, you are one of many voices who are sharing that, which is Batista's ex-wife, the chief of police back at Miami Metro, she had a whole idea, right, that it was him. So This is a really big deal. This is years in the making kind of moment, and it was set up, and I think you might have a point. I think there is something to be said for
that. Did they shoot a scene between them and then just it had to get cut?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's interesting. I was also, honestly, when I started watching the episode, I clicked out of it about 10 minutes in, and I was like, please tell me this is a 90-minute episode. And I was actually surprised it was not, because I think that the story got really compressed in the last, like, 15 minutes, you know? You see, from the time Dexter, like, attacked Logan and killed Logan to the end was like, I needed more there. I needed more time, more talky-talky. I didn't, you know, I just needed more resolution, which I guess is, in a way, there is no, it's like life. There is no resolution. You don't, when people die, they die. You know, I lost my father very suddenly, and there's no, there will never be a resolution, you know? And
what do you think of the smile that overcomes Harrison's face as he drives away?
I think that he's looking at the letter, you know, and it says, you know, I must die so my son can live. Now, of course, that was written 10 years ago in different context because Dexter was faking his death then. But I do think that those words comfort Harrison in a way. But Harrison's going to need years and years of therapy. Like, this is like not something that he should brush under the rug.
No. You know?
And I'm sad that he has to leave Iron Lake because it's the only place he's had some, you know, consistency in his life. He started to find a community. He had a great, you know, potential relationship, you know, girlfriend, you know.
Yeah, that kid is fucked. Let's be real. That kid is driving away. He came into Iron Lake fucked, and he left more fucked.
Another thing that they showed that I was like, why did they show that for one quick moment? They revealed that Harrison was there.
Yes.
When Matt was killed.
Yes.
And that was really interesting to me, because having him know that the entire season, his entire dealing with, you know, Kurt and his entire dealing with his father, that added a whole nother element. So I'm curious, David, was that a decision that was made in episode 10? Or was that something that they decided early on and then they never really explored it again?
This is a perfect Clyde Phillips, Scott Reynolds, Marco Siega question. So maybe I'll shoot them a text and let you know. Next week I'll have an answer.
Let's
for
just
you.
Keep. We're gonna keep this Dexter New Blood alive.
It'll never end.
It'll
never end. And speaking of never ending, we are continuing it. Still, we have Clancy Brown. Yes, Kurt Caldwell himself from Dexter New Blood. Of course, you know him from the movie, the epic movie Highlander and Shawshank Redemption, Sleepy Hollow, Billions. You know him as Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob SquarePants. And of course, the upcoming John Wick Chapter 4. Yeah, this is Clancy Brown, and he plays a badass in every sense of the word, but he loves the Cincinnati Reds. So grab your bat and let's swing away.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Why do you choose Cincinnati over Cleveland? Is it 100% where you live, or are there people in Southern Ohio that are Cleveland fans or Northern Ohio that are Cincinnati fans? Are we okay with that?
Claire?
Well, I mean, I got to defer to you, Clancy, on this. I'm going to give my opinion after, but go ahead.
Okay, so here's my answer about Cleveland versus Cincinnati. Ohio is two states. The north, like everything probably north of Mansfield, although there's some beautiful rural towns like Ashland and stuff like that. Although Ashland's an oil town. But north of Mansfield, which is almost in the middle of the state, is industrial Ohio, right? The only thing that saves them is the Amish that they live up there. Right, and everything south of Mansfield is rural Ohio, Southern Ohio. That's pretty much it. I could go on and do stuff about economies and stuff like that because there is that difference. Except that's more east. That's more of an east west kind of thing. But you know, also having grown up in the '60s and '70s, mostly in the '70s, Cleveland didn't register, but the Big Red Machine was the bomb. Take it away, Claire.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. There are so many divides in Ohio. But what I can say when it comes to sports teams is we bleed the blood of our teams. So if you grew up in a Reds household, as I did, as it sounds like you did, Clancy, you know, that was ingrained from when you were little, you know, that was your team. Much like football, we suffer from lack of NFL teams there consistently. We all go for Ohio State. That's our, you know, college ball is life in Ohio. Right. And the Reds were just the quintessential team for our state, you know, and it's a team that people know internationally, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. really there's just so much. And then you add like Pete Rose in there and then you've got all sorts of stuff happening. So yeah. All sorts of Reds love.
That's a great story. Plus, it's the first professional baseball team. Nothing happens if there's not the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
Nothing.
I mean, it's
true.
The origin story.
That's
yeah,
right.
Clancy, I looked it up. I'm a huge baseball fan. As you know, we've talked a lot of baseball in Dexterland for our 6 months. And you have the plight of a terrible National League team. I have the plight of a terrible National League team in the New York Metropolitans. Did you know that the original name, well, not even, okay, the original name was the Red Stockings.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know can I trivia you on the original name of the Cincinnati Reds? Like when you're talking about like 1866?
Yeah, sure. The Cincinnati Blues. No, I don't know. I don't know. Red Legs? I don't know.
The original name, Red Legs was, no, Red Legs is they changed.
You've got the wiki open. So
oh, 100%.
Tell us what the name is.
100%. The original name was?
Commies.
Was the Communists. So the original name of the Cincinnati Reds was the Resolute Baseball Club of Cincinnati.
There you go.
In 1866. Kind of sexy, huh? Kind of wish that was the name today.
Yeah, the Resolutes.
Go Resolutes.
The Resolutes. I love it. That's so like right after the Civil War name, too.
Right on.
We Resolute this to be a baseball team.
Is that your story, Clancy? Did you become a fan from just being around the Big Red Machine, which we'll get into what that is later. Just basically they were a great team in the 70s. And you were a kid. Do you remember like the age you were? Was it a father? Did you go to a game?
No, it was most. I think I went to two games as a kid. I went to Crosley Field once. I think I saw him play the Phillies or somebody, and I stood outside to get autographs with all the other kids because that's what all the other kids were doing, and the adults were all saying, "Hey, Clancy, go over there and you know, get an autograph." I didn't know who anybody was. If there was a large man that was signing stuff, I like went up to him and had him sign something. Yeah, had no idea. And apparently I got like the worst. I got somebody's brother. I got a whole bunch of people that weren't.
You got the nephew.
You know what? But when you're a kid, it doesn't matter. It's that moment of like connecting with someone who's doing something at a level, a professional level, something you aspire. I mean, what kid growing up, I feel like every boy growing up at some point dreams of playing baseball. I know my boys do, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Well, just to stand there and have that connection. Now, let's just go back for 1 second, Clancy, in case someone is not familiar with the Cincinnati Reds, if they have not read the Baseball Almanac, can you describe the team a little bit for our audience?
Oh, yeah. They're the very first professional team. They used to play in, well, they've played in a couple of places, but the one that I just referenced was Crosley Field because they were owned by the Crosley brothers, who were the Cincinnati millionaires that had Crosley Radio and Crosley Car and all the rest of that stuff. Then in 1970, they moved to Riverfront Stadium, which was a place where really talented players were eaten alive by AstroTurf. That was all the rage back in the 70s. They've had a number of great teams. I think they played the Chicago White Sox in the Black Sox World Series. You know, they've just been around for a long time. They've been around so long that they were actually kicked out of the league for serving beer at a game.
During Prohibition?
I don't know when it was, but that was something that you didn't do when they were kicked out of the league, and a lot of the players then went somewhere else, went to either Boston or Atlanta or someplace, and they started their star players started another team, which if you go to the Atlanta Stadium, Atlanta has this claim of being the oldest team in one place or some nonsense. It's like really a semantic piece of shit.
But
I mean,
that's
it's just like
baseball.
Yeah, I know.
If there's a statistic, baseball will figure out how to make like they. It will drill down into like, well, this is the amount. You know, that's what cracks me up about the sport so much, and I love it. But they will find a way to make a statistic out of anything.
Right. And the lore,
just like the Atlanta.
Exactly.
Atlanta has.
Right. So no, and I just grew up listening to him on the radio. I would like go to sleep listening to him play the Dodgers on the radio. And I wasn't crazy about baseball. Like I said, I wasn't very good at it for one thing. But it was, you know, Marty Brenneman and those guys were my lullaby. They were my, you know, they were my podcasters that I go to sleep to. at the
I
time.
Love that.
Joe Nuxall.
So no, I love that. So hold on, Clancy. That
hold
is
on. Hold on right the, now.
Hold on.
Hold it.
Just if you don't have anything to hold, hold it. I love the Mets, even when they're terrible, because our broadcasters of Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling, to me, and I've heard a lot of TV broadcasters are the best in the game. And even Howie Rose, who's our radio announcer, he can just make anything great. Is that a huge pull for you even to this day, is just the actual people who are, you know?
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because especially our teams are so terrible. It's clearly not because that they're doing so great. It's the people are just making it entertaining.
Yeah. No, I it was Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxall when I was growing up. And then Marty just retired. And they were very specific characters. They're, you know, mythological characters. Now they got
Cowboy Jeff Brantley, Cowboy Jeff Brantley, he's a reliever for the Reds for a while in San Francisco.
He's terrific. He's really good. And I forget the other guy who's there. He's also a real pro, but I don't think he played. I feel embarrassed now. I don't know his name.
Do you ever imagine you'd get called into the booth? Like, I always imagine what it would be like to just sit there in the booth with these guys and like.
I have been, actually.
You've done it?
I did. I went to a Dodger game. They were honoring Lasorda for getting in the Hall of Fame. Now, my family used to own newspapers, and I have this friend who, like, you know, always could get like press passes and stuff. So, you know, whenever the Reds came to town, he would like send me his press pass because he wasn't going to fly out, but he would send me his press pass. And I would get on the field and I would like, you know, meet the guys and talk to them as much as possible. But I was always like too like freaked out and embarrassed. And they're all like children. When you see them up close, they're just kids. They're just, there's nothing that, you know, an old man can say to them. but I was there. They, you know, they kicked us out for the Lasorda thing. And Sparky Anderson was there. and who wasn't quite yet in the Hall of Fame, and he, I think he had just been fired by the Tigers because he said that he would back the players if they walked out or something. I mean, it was something, you know, it was just typical solid
politics.
Yeah, it was typical solid Sparky, though. You know, he's a great guy, and he was there, and so I sent a note up to Marty and Joe in the booth, and they said, yeah, come on up. And so I did a little interview with them. While I was there, Lasorda comes in, and, you know, he starts talking about it. I give him shit. I said, like, you know, I can't believe you're in the Hall of Fame before Sparky.
Ha!
You know, why are you in the Hall of Fame before Sparky? You know, Sparky won 2 world championships in different leagues, dude. You know, he said, you love the Dodgers, right? I said, nope, I'm a Reds man. I live here, but I'm a Reds man. And my kids do love the Dodgers. That's their hometown. So I root for the Dodgers. But that was a fun thing.
That's wonderful. Did you like call the play on the field or were you just chatting?
They just did their little color thing. You know, I think Nuxie left to go drink because that's what Nuxie did, at, you know, in the later innings.
You're the Jerry Seinfeld for the Reds because Jerry always comes to the booth and talks to
them. For the Mets, is that right?
Yeah.
So well, I wish I could. I wish I could when they're in D.C., you know.
You're the guy for the Reds. You're their go-to.
When they're in L.A., that would be fun. Maybe I'll get that one of these days. But there's lots of way more high-Q Reds fans than me. Claire, for instance.
Well, no. I mean, actually, one of the things that I like so much about the team, and I feel like you'll agree, is the history. We talked about it's been around since just after the Civil War, the first baseball team. There would be no baseball without the Reds.
That's right.
Do you have sort of like a highlight of games that have been your favorite games over the history of the, I mean, there's obviously several that stand out. The one where they won the championship for the first time after 35 years, where they sent in, you know, I don't know. Do you have some of your favorites? And if so, do you ever bring them up and watch them?
No, I love them all. I don't. That's a good idea. I should do that.
You need to do it because there's no great memories happening currently. So we have to go back to the old memory.
Yeah, maybe.
Thank God, YouTube.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. We got to believe there's always next year.
Yes.
I think one of the World Series that I love, and there's a lot of great ones. I love that they swept the A's in 90. And, I always tease my Boston Red Sox fans about 75 and all that. But I think the better one was one they lost the year before 75 against the A's. And that's when I think Reggie Jackson was hurt. And so everybody in Cincinnati were like, we're gonna kick their butt. And Gene Tennis, who is actually from Ohio, like set some kind of record for RBIs or something during that. As I think it went to 6, or maybe it went to 7 games. That was a great series, even though it didn't end properly. But it was a great series, and doesn't get enough love, I think, because those teams were just so full of characters. They were all cartoon characters back then.
Well, because they, like you said, you had these games airing on radios. You had them like, it was, our media was so differently consumed back then. So there was so much more description of the people versus now I feel like it's just the coverage of like the events in the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they really had to paint a picture in the way they described things, which gave a wonderful flavor to those old.
Well, you should listen to Cowboy Jeff Brantley.
I want to now.
Yeah, that one's right down Broadway.
If there's a Reds game on.
That pitch was a blue by you pitch. It just blew by him.
Oh, he's so great and really knowledgeable and a good guy. The only thing is he despises the Dodgers. He despises Dodger Stadium. He just, you know, he just doesn't like him because he came up in San Francisco and.
Well, they used to be in the same, not to get too inside baseball here.
Yeah, right.
But
they used to be in the same.
Division,
yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad that they're not anymore so that you can enjoy the Dodgers a little bit and not feel too. But it sounds like it's hard to let go. When they lose today, like we'd be on set and I checked the score and Mets and Reds played each other. And for some reason we decided to
beat you a few games, and then we lost to everybody else for the rest of the year. When they lose, though, today, does it will it get you down a little bit? Are you that much of a fan?
Only if they're contending, you know.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, it's always that. It's always if they're contending, you know, you want them to, and they were like right there, and then St. Louis blew by everybody. Yeah,
those Cardinals.
You know, so you know that's also the character stuff at the end of the season. You know, you see who really has the guts, and bums me out.
Gary, Keith, and Ron, speaking of them again, the Mets were doing so poorly at the end of this last season, and when a game was going like maybe 8 runs to 2 from the other team, they just started bringing out old baseball cards and just going through it. Like, they ignored the game. They were just like, well, and like, that's a typical Mets fan. Is there a memory of seeing something in the booth? I mean, you were in the booth, which is fantastic. But is there a memory of seeing something in the booth or seeing a Pete Rose do something that was wonderfully different odd or quirky in a wonderful Cincinnati Reds kind
of way? Well, I mean, you know, the Marty Brenneman was always, in his later years, there was no filter on the guy. If they weren't playing well, he would let the team have it. He's like, why are you putting that guy in? You know, he can't strike out a paper bag. And I don't understand what's going on. He obviously he wanted to be the manager. What's the biggest, I mean, I guess I remember Eric Davis and his stance, because it was so, it was so loosey-goosey, and like nobody ever had a batting stance like that, and he just would crush the ball. It looked like he wasn't paying attention, and then the guy would like throw a fastball, and he would just ambush the fastball and send it over the thing. There was a couple of guys on the team that ripped their long sleeves off when they had the vest uniform, Glenn something, who just had these enormous guns, just these gigantic biceps, and he could hit the ball pretty far sometimes. And then I think the last time I was in Riverfront before they moved to Great American Ballpark, which is a great ballpark, I saw this kid. I don't remember his name, but he was just called up, and he was a big player, and he hit a ball so hard. It would have gone into the lake, but you know, the shortstop was trying to catch it, and it just kept going up and up and up and up, and it was an out. And I wish I could remember his name, because he was going to be the next George Foster, and then he was killed somehow in the off season. He died in the off season, and entire Cincinnati fans are like, oh no, you know who. What a tragedy. Who's going to bat fourth?
That's sports.
Priorities.
What is your ideal scenario? If you can't be there in person nowadays, what's your ideal scenario to watch a game? Like, do you enjoy watching alone? Do you want to enjoy with your family, friends? What? Paint me a picture.
Paint you a picture.
Please.
I'm so not good at this. I would love to be in. Here's my fantasy. It never happens like this. I would love to be in my basement, watching the Reds versus the Dodgers in the pennant. You know, fighting for the pennant with my daughter and my son and my wife, who's a White Sox fan, and she wouldn't care about the National League, but yeah, I would. And I would sit there, and it would be back and forth and back and forth, and my kids would be like jumping in my face, and I would be very patient and say, just you wait, it'll happen. and then the Reds would come back and embarrass the Dodgers, and then I would win, and I would win graciously, and it would be a teaching moment. Or
love it.
Or because they're adult children now, so I could actually jump in their face and swear and do all sorts of things if I had to.
I like the teaching moment. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And David, I think you mentioned baseball cards. Let's talk about the merch. I mean, clearly you have the hat, the sweatshirt, you've got other stuff going on. As a kid, did it start with collecting the baseball cards for the Reds and getting those autographs?
I grabbed the cards when I could, but I wasn't a crazy baseball card collector. I collected the, you know, Monsters of Hollywood cards. Mm-hmm. Those are the cards I kind of collected. I remember when we moved to D.C., I was in D.C. for like half the year to go to school because my dad was in Congress, and the Orioles were really good. And there was a bottle cap game that you popped a bottle cap off a Coke or something or a Sprite or whatever, and it would have a player, and you could put that bottle cap on a piece of paper that had all the positions and stuff. And if you collected them all, you'd get a free ticket to the game and stuff. And I was very conscientious about that because I wanted to go to a game. I think Baltimore had just beaten the Reds before they, you know, it was when Baltimore started to be really good. And in D.C., those were the only games in town, right? So, and it was American League. But it was never going to actually happen. You know, my folks were never going to take me to an American League game. I did collect, whenever I'd open a pack, if there was a Reds card, that would go right at the top. Mm-hmm. And, of course, all of my cards are in ashes now somewhere, I'm sure. They're all gone.
It's terrible what parents do to our childhood collections. Mine got sold at a garage sale.
It's okay.
Stuff though. That I spent
Somebody
hours.
Probably has.
Someone out there is enjoying them.
Do you remember where you were during the 1990 World Series? And for those of you who weren't there, the 1990 World Series was the Reds versus the Oakland A's. The A's were heavily favored, and more importantly, the Reds swept the A's 4-0 and was the last World Series for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, I was working on a show called Love, Lies, and Murder. It was a miniseries. And I would listen to the game on the radio and was, you know, jumping in the face of all the baseball crew and Teamsters who were saying, the Reds don't have a chance, and then the rest of that. And I, you know, would go over to the sound booth or, you know, wherever the grips were that were watching the game, and you know, Billy Hatcher going, you know, 20 for 20 in the first games. I mean, Billy Hatcher was unconscious during that thing. And they just, you know, they were wire to wire. They were just a superior team. And nobody knew that about them, and nobody ever gave them a chance, and nobody thought that they were as good as they were. But they were. That's actually a great team. That was a great team.
I always like to get into the why sometimes. Do you ever?
Well, I'm sure they'll let you into the why.
Yeah,
are you having trouble getting into the why?
You know,
we can help with that.
Yeah, I can help with that. Yeah.
Listen, you got into the booth for a game and met Tommy Lasorda. If you can get me into the why, that'll go a long way. As in, why do we love what we love? And do you connect with that at all? Like that sort of underdog mentality that the Reds sort of have? Or you know, there's the Yankees, the behemoth, that, you know, top of the world type of team?
No, I think it's when you asked me to do this, I was trying to think, I'm not a fan addict of anything. But you think, you know, what what is the thing that will that immediately puts you in the relaxed frame of mind, you know? And you turn on a base. If I turn on a baseball, it doesn't have to be the Reds. It could be anything. But baseball has become that kind of sanctuary for me, no matter, you know, no matter really who's playing. I find it hard to watch other teams because I don't know the players as well. But if I, you know, sometimes like watching Boston, there's a bunch of ex-Dodgers on that team. There's probably going to be a lot of ex-Reds next year all over Major League Baseball. So I'll probably be able to watch more teams. But that, you know, that's just a happy place for me. And that's just the place where I feel the safest, I guess.
Do you feel like, because I feel similar. Do you feel like it's just you don't have to, you know, life has its own challenges and its own hardships. And so you just get to turn on baseball and let somebody else kind of take over?
Yeah, perfect.
I feel like for me, you know, especially being a lifelong fan of a team like the Reds or whatever your team is out there, you know, you're playing as the viewer, as the observer of this, you know, when you're invested in a team, it's like a lifelong strategic game that you get to watch and play and analyze. And like, you're really a part, like you said, of the characters and understanding the players and their deficits and their assets and what, you know, who's coming from where and why things are being done, especially in baseball, because there's decisions every single second of that game. You know, it's very unlike football or basketball in that way. Right. Baseball is very calculated, very strategic. And if you enjoy strategy and you enjoy sports and you enjoy winning, which I do, you know, you're invested. That's why people are so invested in these teams, you know?
Yeah. And now the stats are so granular.
Yes.
When I was a kid, they weren't. Right. You know, it wasn't. It was like, but then Bill James comes along and changes everything with sabermetrics and. And so that's kind of the thing now. But at the same time, you can't completely discount the poetry of it. You know, the instinct of it, and the, you know, the stories, how everybody gets along. What the, you know, like Castellanos is going to leave this year. You know, he's going to go free agent. God bless him. I hope he makes $1 billion. He's not going to be as good because he's not going to be playing with the same group of characters. He's not going to be playing in that ballpark unless he goes to the Mets, which he might, you know, he might actually hit more home runs in that stadium. What's that stadium called? City Field. Might actually hit a lot of home runs there. I don't know. But, you know, there's all these sort of, what's the word I'm looking for?
The chemistry, but the
X factors,
intangibles,
the intangerinables, exactly. The intangibles are so they also take over the game for me eventually, right? They also, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, you watch the series this year with the Dodgers, and they were just gassed after they beat. After they beat San Francisco, and you could tell there's like, okay, fine, we beat San Francisco. That's all we wanted to do all year. You guys go on and play the World Series. I mean, I'm sure they want to be in a World Series, but at the same time, they're like, we got it last year. You know, we'll be back. But, you know, all we wanted to do was like put San Francisco back in its place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, the end of that, I'd like prefer to remember those, you know, games versus like the final games for the Dodgers this year.
Yeah, right.
Let's say he does go to the Mets, your guy. Are you going to follow him and watch him play there? No. It's just like,
I mean, you know,
if you hear something, great. If you don't,
yeah.
Great.
No, when we were stuck in beautiful Western Central Mass, you know, I had the MLB app on my Roku, so I could watch whatever I want. But if you don't have that, you've got to watch NESN or you know, whatever's on the sports channel.
Mm-hmm. NESN is the Northeastern Sports Network, for those of you who are not in New England, that we got to enjoy and see the beautiful Boston Red Sox.
During the baseball season, it's 24-hour Boston Red Sox games.
Yeah.
It's just... And you know, that's kind of fun, but if I'm in New York, I will probably have to watch a Mets game or maybe even a Yankees game. You know, it's always fun, but you know,
it's not the Reds.
It's not the Reds, but if you know, like I said, if they got a Castellanos or Gray or Luis Castillo's pitching for him, or you know, whatever is on there, I'll watch them just to see how my boys are doing, how they've gone to
There's still a part of you. There's still
yeah,
a thing.
Sure. You care about the legacy.
Yeah, they came from you. Yeah, you saw them when they were babies.
Yeah.
Can I ask a Cincinnati question for both of you?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yes, we accept your.
Thank you. As a New Jerseyan. We can't have a conversation about this, about something Cincinnati, without asking about the chili. Now, do you eat chili when you watch a game sometimes? Is there chili served at the Great American Ballpark currently? And I'm told to stay away from Skyline Chili, or must
well, that's
one
a lie.
Enjoy Skyline Chili.
Skyline Chili is great, but it is a franchised, you know, restaurant. So of course the mom and pop chili that you're going to get, you know, just like a burger. I consider myself a bit of a burger connoisseur. You know, you're going to have a great burger if you go to a franchise place that's known for burgers, but the best is going to be the little mom and pop shop. Same with chili, you know, but yes, absolutely. But you don't just get a bowl of chili, you get the chili dogs. And then what's really nice is when they serve the chili in the batting helmet that is turned upside down, and that's filled with chili. That's my personal favorite.
Excellent, Claire.
Thank you,
I'm Switzerland.
I'm here for you. I'm here to answer
these
chili
totally
questions.
Switzerland when it comes to Skyline Chili.
too hot topic to really give an opinion, I feel. Let me ask you this, Clancy. If I'm getting anything from this whole podcast, which is also giving me insight into myself, it's the whole experience of loving a team, the lifelong experience of being invested with, you know, the team itself, the players, the changing of the players, the changing of the rules of the games. Now they're in a new stadium. What makes the Reds' new stadium so perfect for them? Because you said you love the new stadium.
It's tiny. Mm-hmm. It's really small. And it's got the smokestacks, and, you know, it's just, it's very Cincinnati, that stadium. But I love the fact that it's as small as it is. It is not attended as well as it should be. When it first opened, it had a pretty good attendance. But the times that I've been there, it was really easy just to walk up and get, front row seats. But I think that's true in almost every stadium, except maybe in New York or L.A. or at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. You know, you could walk up in you can get front row seats at White Sox Stadium. I was about to say Comiskey, but I don't think that's what they call it now. And you can probably do that at Cincinnati, unless they're contending. I mean, you know, it's always a good team you have to do. But I try to go to every stadium. I mean, there's nothing like a game at Fenway. It's just storied, and it's got its own feel. And Wrigley's the same way. And you know, it's Great America Ballpark is it's got a ways to go before it's one of those. You know, Riverfront ended up having a horrible reputation at the Three Rivers, and you know those old multi-purpose things. You know, but the old state, you know, Dodger Stadium is the third oldest stadium now in major leagues, and that's a great place to go see a ball game.
It is.
And when you guys are out in LA, I got season tickets, so you know, let's go see it.
Clancy, you're speaking my language, baby.
Yeah, man.
This is amazing. Yeah. Yes. You can see the bullpen now. You can walk right up to the bullpen in Dodger Stadium. I love the new little changes they did.
Yeah,
they did a great job with the changes recently.
Yeah, no, it's a great place to go see a ball game. And you don't even have to know the teams to go enjoy yourself there. That's like I just went to the Chargers game. Chargers got beat by Minnesota, and it's just a complete different thing. It's exhausting to go to a pro football game.
Here it's huge.
It's huge. It's beautiful. It's really again a great venue, but pro football is an exhausting endeavor. Baseball is not exhausting. Baseball is very. It's very restful, very nice. I mean, I've hung out after the game in my seats and just, you know, had like heart-to-heart conversations with people. And then I've left early too and, you know, beat the traffic. You know, you do everything. You go into in Dodger Stadium, you go into the parking lot to watch the fireworks on Friday night, you know. There's all sorts of little traditions that you do. I don't know that Great America Ballpark has that quite yet. Maybe they do, but, you know, I don't live there, so I don't have season tickets. And
Chavez Ravine. We'll meet in Chavez Ravine. Clancy, this was an absolute pleasure. Can you please gift us with a love letter to your team of teams?
All right. Dear Cincinnati Reds, beat Cleveland. Love, Clancy. Beat the Guardians. Love, Clancy.
Fair enough. Simple. I love it. Thank you, Clancy Brown.
The Guardians. I should put on my Cleveland hat while I'm at it.
I love it.
Claire, was he right with that whole Northern Ohio, Southern Ohio thing? Is it really divided like that?
It is so divided. Yes, absolutely. Ohio is a place that you just have to have lived to understand. It's just an experience, David. So I could sit here and try to explain it, or Clancy and I could try to explain it to someone like yourself who has not lived there, but I don't think we would ever fully be able to encapsulate the experience.
It's not so much a united state as it is a state of mind.
It is a state. It is round on the sides and high in the middle, Ohio. It's interesting, though. We talked a lot in that episode about the Reds, obviously, and I just love Clancy. He's such an amazing person. And one thing we kind of circled back to a couple times was the statistics of baseball. So I'm curious about your opinion, because I have a quandary going on, my own personal quandary right now. My son, who is a fantastic athlete, he will be 10 in March. He is a phenomenal baseball player. He plays, everyone who knows me knows he plays soccer. That's his number one sport. But he's also equally talented in baseball.
This isn't just proud mom. This is a fact. He is good at baseball.
He actually got chosen out of all of Southern California. He did a national baseball commercial with like all these pros. So he got to like go to Arizona and shoot for like 4 days, get like pro baseball training. That's a whole other thing. Here's the question. He's a lefty. He is in love. Now, he's a great pitcher. He's a great left-handed pitcher, which I always tell him, if soccer doesn't work out, that's my next thing that you can do to buy me my house. But he absolutely loves and is absolutely phenomenal at catching. Now, I had to look up, the last left-handed catcher in Major League Ball was 1989. So these guys who are coaching him are like, listen, this is probably your last year. We can let you catch because there's no future in it. But I'm like, hey, listen, molds are made to be broken. The fact is he probably will never play in the majors. A, because we're so focused on soccer. B, because that's really hard to do even if we weren't focused on soccer. So let him catch. Let the lefty catch, right? Or no? Or
ooh, that's a tough one. I don't think it's so much a stat thing. I think if I had to think about it, it's the reason why there aren't that many left-handed catchers. I think it's because when you would throw with your right arm, it's the quickest way to get to first base.
Yes.
And it's the quickest.
And you have to shift. You have to move the ball.
Yes.
If you're a lefty.
And there's a lot of right-handed players, so you're always going to be in the way. Say you're trying to, you know, strike him out, throw him out, and you want to, there's a guy stealing second, and you want to throw it, but most of the hitters are right-handed. You're always going to have a person in your way if you're left-handed, because they're going to be to your left. It's a very interesting thing.
Okay, so this is baseball all stats. True. I have learned this as a mom of a lefty, right? However, also, at age, you know, 9 and a half, whatever, he is picking off people on second, on third, on first. He's catching the fouls, like the flies, you know what I mean, to get an out. So I'm like, hey, as long as he's able to do those things, which, by the way, no other player on his team is able to do that, let him catch. I don't know.
Let the man catch. Is he going to change the sport? Is he going to be the iconoclast we've all been wanting, the left-handed catcher?
I mean, I don't know, you know? This is all obviously if soccer doesn't work out. This is like plan B, but, you know, it's something to think about. So I would appreciate if you, as an avid fan of the sport, would continue to, you know, develop thoughts about this for me.
I will pray. I like plan C for catcher.
Uh-huh.
But guys, we hope you enjoyed today's episode, which is hopefully your plan A for podcasts. We had a great time with Clancy. Claire and I Had a blast. Hope you guys did too.
What a career. I love him.
Like and subscribe. And of course, listen to him as Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob. I hope you re-binge all of Dexter New Blood. What a good time we had. And we'll see you for a brand new episode next Thursday for Fanatics. Love you guys.
Bye. And before we go, you guys, next week we have Victoria Conifol coming on. You know her from Days of Our Lives. She, of course, plays Clara Brady, not Claire, Clara Brady. And Victoria is coming on to talk about the sitcom Friends, which I love. And trust me when I say it is a great episode. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at wearefanatics.
Yes, that's We Are, F-A-N-A-D-D-I-C-T-S. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Kelsey Goldberg. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode. Take me out to the Reds game, to the Great American Ballpark.
Fried bologna and skyline chili. I don't know if we'll ever win the World Series.
Oh, David. Downer, David. Aww. I don't want to sing anymore.